Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Israel Studies. I'm Yaakov Yadgar. Today we're talking to Yaron Peleg of Cambridge University about his new book, Directed by God, Jewishness in Contemporary Israeli Film and Television. In this book, Peleg analyzes several representations of Jewish religiosity in Israeli film and television that challenge secular Zionism in contemporary Israeli society. Dr. Peleg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Let's open with a claim and a suggestion you make at the very opening of your book, and I'll quote just a short paragraph you open with. The claim is that a century after its establishment as a secular Jewish national entity, the State of Israel at the dawn of Zionism's second century is becoming increasingly more religious in many important ways. The suggestion this book makes is that one of the most vivid testimonies of this ironic metamorphosis can be found in the history of the country's visual media, Israeli films and television program. This is a bold claim that has been widely discussed recently. Maybe you can say a few words about the argument of Israel's religionification or religionization, whatever we translate hadatah to.
Yes, thank you. You know, the thing or the aspect most people talk about and most of the media, or I should say news media, is focusing on lately is that word that you used, hadatah, which means in Hebrew a process of active imposing religious practice on people who are not necessarily wish to have it as part of their lives, and that the focus in the media has been on official efforts to increase the presence and the practice of religion in Israeli Jewish public life. But what my book looks at is not these official efforts that are more politically motivated, but at what I claim is a more popular attitude towards religion in the Israeli public. And one of the things I think that one of the ways I think that we can see this through is in the way the country's entertainment industry, films and television, to be more precise, express these trends. Because, as you know, television less and films are what we consider artistic production or artistic expression, and those are not necessarily, although in Israel this is not necessarily also true, but those are generally not directed as blatantly, as politically as other efforts, for example, in education, in the army, or in the public celebration of religious celebrations publicly. So yes. This is what I'm trying to do in this book, is to follow the popular expression or popular attitude of Jews in Israel towards the place of religion, of the Jewish religion or Jewish ritual or Jewish sensibility, or that's why I called it Jewishness, because it's a very amorphous kind of mm-hmm. concept, especially with respect to Judaism. And I think you also talk about it in your book about similar things in changes in the attitude towards what we call Judaism in Israel. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So just to make it a bit clearer, you do not argue that there is an, let's call it a concerted effort to instill or to somehow proselytize and convince Jews to become more religious in Israel, but you actually present an argument regarding a natural development within Jewish Israeli society where elements that or general discourse in Israel would generally identify as religiousness and Jewishness become much more explicitly noted and discussed in artistic production. Is that the case?
Yes, that's the case. I don't think, of course, I think the two are related and have an effect, a reciprocal effect. But what I'm trying to focus in the book is really on the, I would say, voluntary or the genuine. All these things, of course, are very problematic, but the voluntary, the genuine, the penchant that Jewish Israelis have for the Jewish religion in their lives, irrespective mm-hmm. or perhaps aside to or along the other, the more focused and coercive, yes. let's say, efforts that you talk about.
Mm-hmm. So let's just portray maybe two different paths through which this development could have taken place. One would be that there has been a genuine secularization of Jewish Israeli society at some point in the past, and now what you identify in Israeli media is a resurrection or even a devolution of what we could call the secularization process. And the other would be that this Jewishness has always simmered or has always been present within Israeli society, but didn't receive much representation in the Israeli film and television industry. Yeah. This would be two different explanations of how the history of this issue developed, correct?
Yes, yes, I agree. By the way, I have to say before we proceed that not everybody agrees with the way I see the process that I chart in my recent book. For example, there are scholars who think that there is a growing division in Israeli public between a sector that's becoming more religious, more fundamentalist, mm-hmm. and a sector that's becoming more fundamentally secular, if you will. And so mm-hmm. There are people who claim that. I actually, my opinion as a person who has observed Israeli culture for many years and has written about it, primarily through literary and cinematic angles or lenses, is that there is a discernible process of what we call religiousification of mm-hmm. the public in the ways that I specify in the book and that can be observed through the media. Now, this process, I think, is a working or a dialectics, if you will, of the tension that you mentioned in your question that was always, I think, inherent in Zionism, which is a secular movement that is calling for the establishment of a secular Jewish polity mm-hmm. in the name of a religious principle, that of a return to the land, messianism, whatever you want to call that. So from the very outset, that was something, this tension was very much part of Zionism. And what I'm trying to show in my book is that how this tension towards the end of the 20th century, mm-hmm. more than 100 years after Zionism has been sort of developed or established, is not unraveling, but perhaps is changing towards a specific direction. Certainly, at the time of our talking right now, this is a direction that it is taking. It may of course change once again, but we can only do is look back and look at the present, and into the future we cannot really see.
Yeah. So obviously the immediate question would be, how should we understand this phenomena? What are the causes, or what brings about this development? How do you understand it?
I think that these are not things that would be new to people. This is something that has been observed by others for some time. And that is not only both the ideological changes that are happening in Israel and also the demographic ones within Jewish Israel. Again, I have to emphasize again that in my book and this talk in general is focusing primarily on Jewish Israel, because this is where these processes are taking place. Of course, there is the context of the Middle East and the societies in it that are also undergoing similar processes, by the way. But what I'm focusing on is what is happening in Jewish Israel, and because of the ideological, I would say, the ideological changes that are happening in Israel with the rise of nationalism, the decline of the left, I would say, and the growth of religious sectors in Israel that were previously not as numerous and not as influential politically. For all of these changes, which have been noted by a lot of people, these changes, I believe, are taking place. Now, as I said, some of them, I think, are direct and from above. I think one of the things that is particular to the process, to the cultural process that I am focusing on in my book, is the interference of organizations with money, such as, for example, the Avichai Foundation, this Jewish American organization that is dedicated to the promotion of so-called Jewish values and for the bridging the tension between religious Israelis and secular ones, in through the encouragement of artistic works, primarily television programs and films, that focus on so-called, again, Jewish values, traditional religious Jewish values, we would call them. And so that the external involvement or encouragement of art towards that direction by wealthy organizations such as Avichai has, of course, shaped the public attitude toward these kinds of issues. However, what these kinds of efforts never do, no matter how much money they have, what they cannot do is they cannot create something popular if the public doesn't like it. It doesn't matter how good it is and how wonderful it is and how beautiful it is. If the public is not somehow responding to what the public is being shown, then I think no matter how much money you put into it, it fails. But in the case of the Avichai Foundation, what we saw, I mean, they were responsible for underwriting some of the earliest television shows in Israel that featured relationships between secular and religious in a very positive way, something that didn't exist before. Their shows, the popularity of these shows, I'm talking, for example, about the 2007 show, A Touch Away, Merchak Negi'a, which was extremely popular in Israel and was a runaway hit, because it showed this kind of wish to bridge the tension between Orthodox Israelis and secular Israelis, it resonated very strongly with the public. And that's what I'm interested in, to see how these kinds of themes find a way into the consensus and attract the following and the popularity they have. And I see these responses, these public responses, as sort of the real gauge of the public mood and the public attitude towards religion.
Yes. Now, there's an interesting nuance taking place here. We could easily imagine a setting in which, given some outside intervention, there's more representation of a certain group. In this case, maybe of Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox Jews in the Israeli media and popular culture. Obviously, they've been mostly absent. And then since, I guess, two decades, there's much more representation this way or another of this society. We could nevertheless imagine how this would end up in further othering and exotification of the group, and not necessarily express a sense of heightened sensitivity to issues of religiousness and Jewishness. Your argument is much more nuanced than that. You argue that the religious themes or the Jewish themes that are now being taken up by Israeli producers, directors, echo a wider sense of or a wider sentiment of Jewish identity among Israelis.
Yes, I think that there's certainly a measure of I would call it the safari, a religious safari. The television takes secular viewers into a safari that looks at the exotic religious animals. There is an element of that, of course, and television. Cinema also, but television especially, is always looking for something new. It's always looking not to be provocative necessarily, but to present something that is new and different so that people tune in and so the show is successful and attracts advertisers. Mm-hmm. But I think that only takes you so far. And especially in a country as small as Israel, when people really know one another pretty well, and even if they live in a different kind of environment or a neighborhood, and if we talk about secular and religious, even then, there is quite a lot of knowledge about one another in Israel because of the smallness of the community. So I don't think you can exoticization can only go so far. So I think what these shows are also doing is they are exposing, in many ways, not just exotic animals, so to speak, but also so-called enemies, because there was always a very big division between religious and secular in Israel, and these shows are trying to bridge them. And now I want to say something about this, because in most of the cases where these films and television shows are being made, they're being made usually by religious Jews or ex-religious Jews. In the case of television programs, it's people who are part of these environments before becoming filmmakers, and what they're doing is they're processing their own life experiences earlier in their life as part of these communities, and now that they have crossed over to the secular mm-hmm. community, or I suppose to some aspect has been secularized, they themselves. They are trying to process it as a personal thing, but they succeed in also making it much more socially resonant. And I think mm-hmm. that is the attraction for the public to be familiar with something, to familiarize themselves with something that they don't know and perhaps didn't particularly understand and even disliked. And the hankering after something that was always very, very palpable and very present in Israeli culture, which is a wish for unity, sort of a Jewish unity, mm-hmm. which is more than just national unity, but it's also Jewish unity.
Yeah. So much of this discussion and the way this is usually being analyzed, this whole phenomena, is based on an infrastructure of this division between secular and religious, between the secular Jews in Israel and the religious world, between the very idea of Zionism as a secular movement and Judaism as a baggage it carries somehow from the Jewish past. And the shows could easily just perpetuate the sense of a binary or dichotomy between these two groups, while all observers of Israeli society also know that there is a vast majority of Jews who do not fall in either of the sides of this binary and prefer to identify, I guess, outside of it as traditional, Masorti, or simply not secular or not religious, and don't want to be bothered with this labeling. Do you see the shows that have been emerging in Israel also representing this segment of Israeli society?
I think this is an excellent question, because what you described, this sort of hybrid Jewish identity, is precisely what these shows have hit upon, and what is, I believe, what the public wants. There is a wish in Israel, it wasn't always part of Israeli culture, but there is certainly since the 80s, there is a wish in Israel because of various political and as I said, social developments, for a more, I would say, holistic Jewish identity, which earlier in the country's history was not possible. And the only other option was the options were either you are a socialist secular person or you are an Orthodox person. National religious sector was not very active. And so after the 80s, there emerged, because of these changes that we've talked about, this hankering after a holistic Jewish identity that would be neither very Orthodox or religious or completely secular, something that would incorporate elements of both. And I think that is what these shows are really talking about. I think one of the best examples for that would be, I would say, a very contemporary show which hasn't made it into the book, because the book was published in 2016, and this show is from this year. I'm talking about the show called Shababnikim. I don't know if you know this. It follows several young yeshiva students in the yeshiva somewhere in Israel, and they live in a very, very Orthodox environment, but the lives that they lead are very much influenced by Israeli secular sensibilities. And I think one way to explain this very, very succinctly would be to focus on the name of the show, which is Shababnikim, which is really interesting use of the word, because Shabab in Arabic is it means youth, and it's usually directed at sort of young people who are loafers, who are up to no good. And that's one level of it. In the Israeli sort of security parlance, it means not just young people who are up to no good, but up to no good against Jews, some kind of,
enemies.
I meant to say terrorists in the making. Uh-huh. And here, you know, in Orthodox circles, this also has yet another meaning, that of young men, yeshiva students, of course, who are not particularly studious and who has sort of roving eyes, or they're not completely sort of with the religious curriculum of their yeshiva. And so I think it's really interesting to see how this show tries to incorporate all of these concepts of trying to be religious, but also not blind or deaf or completely closed off from the secular life that's raging around you. And I think this is one of the reasons why the show is so popular. Of course, it has excellent production values, but at the same time, it is hitting a very, very genuine nerve in contemporary Israeli culture that tries to, I suppose, both to respond to as well as define a contemporary holistic Israeli Jewish identity, which the show is very successfully doing.
There's an obvious ethnic element to our discussion here. To a large extent, this dichotomous worldview that you described, in which secular and religious are used to be the two exclusive options of Jewish identity in Israel, this is a basically Ashkenazi or European-born kind of identity that didn't sit well or hasn't been fitting well with Jews who come from Arab and Muslim countries, who usually comprise that vast silent majority of those who are in between or don't fall in either of these poles, what we call Mizrahim in Israel. Do you see the resurgence or the emergence of these more Jewishly attentive shows to also reflect this sensibility and to be better representations of Mizrahi Jews?
Yes, I think that's, again, this is a very precise question, because that's exactly, I think, that's precisely what is happening. And I would say that if you had to isolate one major influence on these trends that we have been talking about, that would be Mizrahi religiosity, that is, non-Ashkenazi Jewish religiosity as it was cultivated in Israel. Because when the Mizrahi immigrants, the non-European immigrants came to Israel in the 50s and the 60s, they came to a country that practiced this real, what for them was very artificial, division between religiosity and secularity, something that was not very natural to them. Eventually, as these groups of people integrated into the culture and became more comfortable about who they are and what they are about, they also influenced the culture from the inside and took it towards that direction of inclusivity or holisticness, if you will, of their ways of life and sort of on a national scale. So, for example, again, I'll go back to Haredi society and give you an example of that. A lot of people are talking, for example, when you talk about the Shas phenomenon, mm-hmm. that rose in the late 80s, a lot of people are talking about the Ashkenazization of the Mizrahi culture, whereby people, Mizrahi Jews who usually didn't dress in black clothes and didn't look like Lithuanian Hasidim, started wearing these clothes and started a process by which Ashkenazi religious practices penetrated the Mizrahi sector. So a lot of people are talking about that. But I think what less people are talking about is a sort of a reciprocal phenomenon, or maybe an opposite phenomenon, whereby the Ashkenazi Haredi community has been Mizrahified, if you will, by exactly the kind of practices and lifestyle you see in Shababnikim, the show we've just spoken about, whereby the Ashkenazi, Eastern European, Haredi lifestyle is broken down, or I would say opened up to more secular influences that you see in the show. And I would say that this would be a very distinct Mizrahification, if you will, of that culture.
Okay, this is all very interesting, but I have to ask, how much of these changes have to do with the penetration or the introduction of new players into the field? How much of this has to do with the fact that the religious Zionist camp, for example, in Israel, has devoted much attention to encouraging people to go into these fields of cultural production and take an active role? Or let's call it the change of the cultural elite in Israel, which has opened up at least a little bit to allow Mizrahim and non-prototypical secular Tel Avivians into the field of the cultural production. How much would you how much of an importance would you assign to this demographic change?
Yeah, I'm not sure about this because, for example, there is a really interesting case of in 1989, the so-called national religious movement, Mitnachalim, settlers, established a film school called Ma'ale in order to affect this kind of change in Israeli media, which they perceived as left-leaning and liberal, from the inside. So the idea was to establish a media school that would be ideologically controlled and would educate filmmakers, television makers, in the art of making, in the art. Mm-hmm. And they would then go into the world and spawn a lot of shows that would present the point of view of the settler movement. This has been a resounding failure because for the first, I would say, almost 20 years, that school has not produced a significant cadre of such envisioned filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And it has become, in fact, a seminar for high school teachers in the religious sector who would then go to their back into the school system, to the religious school system, and would teach students about media. Some graduates of this school started making significant films only, I would say, in the mid-2000s. But I don't know how much they would be, you can credit the school, the Ma'ale school, for those educations. I think these are just, I think because these sectors are becoming more demographically numerous, these religious sectors, and because of that, there is more of a seepage, or I would say, a blending of these sectors in Israel, you get these cultural exchanges between these sectors and communities, and the members of those communities then start picking up on some of the practices of the other communities. And one of these practices is filmmaking. And I think it's a more natural process than one that can be, in fact, isolated as something else.
Yeah. So let me ask you the question we usually ask here in New Books Network at the beginning of each interview. What brought you to study this phenomenon in the first place? How did you arrive at this topic?
Well, this is interesting. I was born in a kibbutz, and I was born in Israel that was very much secular and still sort of the last vestiges, I would say, of labor Zionism. And it's secularism, and then left Israel after the army to go and study abroad, and settled outside of Israel and lived outside of Israel for most of my life since then. And because of that, a certain kind of Israel was frozen, I suppose, culturally within my psyche, and my annual or biannual visits to Israel make the changes that are happening to Israel very much more visible than I suppose they would be for people who live in Israel and constantly part of it. And mm-hmm. I was very struck by these changes, and was very curious about them, and wanted to look into them. And I think this really would be, I suppose one can say that since a person, as Shaul Chernyakhovsky once said, is sort of the made in the shape of their Adam enoil elatavnit nof moladeto, as we say, the shape of their, I suppose translated into the shape of their early sort of years of childhood. This, mm-hmm. of course, I was very much. Secular Israel was one which I felt very comfortable in, and the changes made me uncomfortable. And in trying to understand them, I think it inspired me to write the book.
This is very interesting. Let me ask you a couple of more general questions regarding the implications of the phenomena that you've studied. You've already noted that this is largely a Jewish-Israeli narrative. How do you see the non-Israeli Jews fitting in with this story?
This is, again, an excellent question, although I didn't look at it in the book, which really focuses on the Jewishness aspect of Israeli society. I think because of the very precarious situation of primarily the Muslim, the Arab minority in Israel, I think that it is extremely difficult for them from the point of view of religion or religiosity to express that part of their culture publicly in Israel. This is not something, I mean, they have the Arab minority in Israel has many obstacles that are preventing it from, I would say, quote unquote, a more normal life as part of the country because of the situation in the area, security, et cetera, et cetera. And I think their ability to express themselves more freely and more genuinely has been curbed because of that. There have been I don't know of any shows in Israel that look at this minority from a religious perspective, that is exploring their tradition to, I suppose, religious traditionalism. But we all know the shows that have been made. We're talking about Avodah Aravit, Arab Labor, and then, you know, a derivative show, the script writer, Hatasritai, by the same writer, Said Kashua. Recently, there was, I believe there's a show being made right now in the making called Dr. Kraz. That's the name that has been published, which looks at Arab society, but without overt political and religious focus. I think it's not even a show that's going to be looking at the relations between Arabs and Jews necessarily, but focuses on Arab society. But really, this is beside this book that looked at something very different. And I suppose these shows that we've been talking about, I suppose, would not have great popularity in you know, in Arab sectors of Israel, but I don't have any information on that, I must mm-hmm. say.
Okay, and I guess one of the most apparent phenomena currently overshadowing Israeli film and TV productions are the successful selling or exporting of some Israeli shows to international companies like Netflix and Amazon. Certain shows have become genuinely international hits. Do you see the genres you're dealing with to be following the same path? Are they part of this phenomena?
Not yet. You're talking about the phenomenon of Israeli shows, as you said, that have made it internationally. Most of those shows have to do with Israel's security situation and its reflection in the similar problems in the Western world since 9/11. That is, unfortunately, what has happened is that the United States and now also Europe have been following the same kind of security problems that Israel has been experiencing earlier on, and inspire shows most recently, for example, as Fauda. Mm-hmm. It's these kinds of shows that have to do with the Arab-Israeli conflict that have been primarily, not all of them, but primarily bought by, disseminated or sold for dissemination in the world outside of Israel after they're being adapted. So I would say those shows, other shows have to do with other specific things that could be true for other societies, such as autism, psychoanalysis. You know, the first show, Betipul in Treatment, was the first one to sort of cross over. But shows mm-hmm. about the religious, as far as I know, have not yet made it or have not yet been sold to other shows? I would say primarily because certainly in Europe, we're talking about a very secular society in which religion, Christian religion, is not a very big part of the, I would say, search for identity or identity crisis in Western European culture. So it's not really an issue that is preoccupying Europeans, Christian Europeans, and to the extent that they deal with aspects of religion, it's Muslim religion and the way it encroaches upon their secularity, not their Christian aspects of life. In the United States, the same thing. Although it's not you can't call the American society a secular society because of the separation of church and state. Those issues are not really problematic for Americans, and I think because of that, these shows have not yet. Perhaps some people will find a formula to transfer them to these cultures and make them more relevant for them. But so far, it hasn't happened. And this, I would say, is a genre of Israeli shows that has not yet made it abroad.
Yeah, this is type of a Jewish joke that doesn't translate yes, to other languages.
Exactly. Really, this thing that we're talking about is, I think, has always been part of Jewish culture and has been exacerbated in the modern time in Israel because of the pretension of the Zionists to create a Jewish secularity, which is really paradoxical. And what we're seeing is the unraveling of this conceit and the changes that are being made to it to fit a more genuine, I suppose, Jewish existence that incorporates some form of religiosity, something that, for example, American Jews, if we talk about a successful Jewish community, have been able to do precisely because of the separation of church and state in the United States that allows American Jews to be, as Yud Lamed Gordon said in the 19th century, to be Jews at home and people abroad. Mm-hmm. That is something that a state of the Jews in Israel really doesn't enable you to be or to do. And that's precisely the cause for these changes that we're seeing in Israeli society.
Mm-hmm. So this is actually, this was about to be my next question, and maybe you just can elaborate. What do we study from this phenomenon in Israeli society? Do you see this as a predetermined course in which Israel becomes more Jewishly self-preoccupied?
Looking into the future is not something people like to do, but mm-hmm. I think certainly, I can't remember if Marx said that or perhaps Terry Eagleton, reading Marx, said that, you know, the future really is in the past. Mm-hmm. So if we look at what is happening now in Israel and what I'm trying to follow in my book is, I would say, an identity crisis and a search for identity that is happening in Israel, in which the Jewish tradition, to be very careful, will play a more important part in the lives of Israelis, certainly in comparison to the place religion had in Israeli culture earlier on, certainly in the Yishuv, and also afterwards during the first decades of the state. That kind of situation, I don't think will return. And based on what has been happening in the last few decades, I think this search of identity will lead Israelis to incorporate more, I suppose, Jewish principles, however you understand them, into their lives. You know, I want to perhaps remind you of, and I talk about in the book, there's a really very prophetic short story that was written, very famous, by Chaim Chazaz in the 1940s, in the early 40s, called the Hadrasha, the sermon, in which he looks precisely at these kinds of questions. and has really very, again, prophetic things to say about it. For example, he says in his book, the character, the major character in the book is giving the speech before a committee about these paradoxes. And some of the things he says are, for example, and I'm quoting from the book, Zionism and Judaism are two different things, perhaps even two things that stand in contrast to one another. Yeah. And then he says even this really very, I would say sort of strong statement, Zionism begins where Judaism is destroyed. This was perhaps true in the 1940s. But what we're seeing now is that there is a refusal to go with this, or a refusal to accept it, and an attempt to change it and to infuse the two. So that Zionism does become, in fact, somehow more Jewish.
I see. Well, this is an opening to a much, much larger discussion, which I'm afraid we'll have to leave for now. We've taken way too much of your time, Dr. Peleg. Can you tell us just in closing what kind of projects you're working on currently?
Yes, my current project is going to be on the history of the modern Hebrew novel, the first 100 years, 1850 to 1950. Particularly, we'll be looking at the problematic attitude towards romance and love as an expression of some of the problems Jews had with adjusting to modernity.
Well, sounds very interesting. Dr. Peleg, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you, listeners, for being with us.
Thank you very much.